Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, Beach Lake. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumbo Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumbo Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumbo Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you very much, Audrey, for getting us connected again tonight. How many shows is it? 14,020? Well, maybe not quite that many, but welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Blog Talk Radio Network and the Jumbo Justice Radio Show. And yes, Mike, Johnny Cash probably is on upchucky.org. I think we mentioned that on a previous show, but if people haven't looked at the website upchucky.org, that's C-H-U-C-K-Y.org, you can click on any entertainer just about you can think of. Well, it's not quite that extravagant, but let's say the Platters, if you can remember back that far and you were around in the 1950s, or you can pick Linda Ronstadt, you can pick any person you want, and when you click on them, you get, or their link, you get to hear 3 to 2 to 3 to 4 hours of their music, and you can listen for about an hour, and a little signal will come on and say, are you still listening? And if you say yes, it'll go on, and you can listen for another hour. It's just an incredible website. I don't know if I mentioned that last week, but I'll mention it again. It's really good. It's really good business to go to upchucky.org, and then you can see videos also of these people, and they have special genre like cafes, like there's a country cafe and that type of thing with all the singers listed, or many of those country singers listed in there. It's just an incredible website. And, more power to the guy that, or lady, whoever it is that put this thing, I guess it's Chucky, that put this thing together. Mike and Emily, thank you for helping us here tonight. And we're off on another radio show, and the purpose is what it always is. We try to look at news, issues, events, developments, and it's always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. A couple of our news stories tonight are, I guess you would call them humorous, but sometimes I begin to wonder, occasionally, about the use of discretion of some folks that work in our criminal justice field, at least discretion in terms of common sense being applied to situations they encounter, but more about that just a bit later. The show is dedicated to those energetic and untiring people who work in the police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice system. And we have a news story about that tonight that involves Toledo, and it's kind of interesting what they're doing up there. It's they think it may be the first place in the country it's doing it. I doubt that it is, because how can you keep track of 18,000 police departments and who knows how many probation and parole and that type of thing. But anyway, a little innovation they're working with in terms of electronic connections for juvenile offenders and their parents and probation officers. They're doing something different up there. They're trying to see how it works. We'll talk about that. But these CJ professionals, of course, and during these holiday times, they work extra hours to go out and protect us 24/7, as they say. You're listening on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and Alan Devey's the CEO, the master of the medium, and the genius behind it. And he's the guy that started this 4 years ago, and now there are thousands and thousands of shows. In fact, it's gotten so crowded. Those of us who do this for nothing, yes, I don't pay anything for this. I used to say what's possible. Any person, any interest group, any organization can have their own broadcast in streaming audio live over the Internet worldwide on an unlimited number of listeners. You can do that still. But starting February 1, including this show, we won't be able to broadcast between the hours of 7 in the evening and 11. Of course, our show starts at 9, and we won't be able to broadcast more than 30 minutes unless we subscribe to a premium show plan, which involves the investment of money. Imagine that. So I'm thinking about that, but if not, I think we'll move the show to 11 o'clock, shorten it, and mess around with it that way and see what happens. Tonight's show is going to be kind of interesting. I just ran across these about a week ago, maybe a little longer than that. But if you go to that marvelous site called archive.org, you can find on there a 111 30-minute, actually the 29-minute radio shows in a famous radio network series called Halls of Ivy. And what the Halls of Ivy show is about is the actor Ronald Cohen, and his wife, his actual wife, he plays the president of Ivy College in Midwestern United States. That could be like here in Ohio. And his wife, his actual wife, plays the wife of the president. And there's some feature characters in there, like there's every week. You've got the college board of trustees member, or board of governors, they call it in this show, who is kind of a, you know, hard to get along with, and the president has little feuds with him and that type of thing. You've got the librarian. You've got the crazy professors. You know what they're like, all kinds of things. But there's 111 of these shows, and they are really funny. And the writers for these shows were big-time writers, and they did some other famous shows. I'd advise you to go to archive.org. Just type in Halls of Ivy under audio. Click check audio and then search for Halls of Ivy, and you'll see the single episodes there. It'll be 111 different shows, 29 minutes, and they're really funny. We're going to deal with one tonight about book theft, alleged book theft on campus. But I think you'll really enjoy these. These are really top-class radio shows. Well, you're listening on your computer, on your cell phone, or whatever, you can do that and listen to the show during the news show. If you like, you can call into our news segment. I'll be talking a lot on the news segment as usual, but the call-in number is 347-996-5983. It's 347-996-5983. And some of the news stories tonight are kind of interesting. Well, Audrey has a Bond joke tonight. She's telling me that it's a repeat joke. I gave her 5 new ones this week. She says, no, I'd like to use this joke. Yeah, I'm not going to argue with her. It's the end of the year. You've got to keep co-workers happy, correct? Audrey, go ahead with your show. I mean, excuse me, go ahead with your joke.
Professor Haley, I have a repeat blonde joke for tonight since it is the holiday season and I am doing my part of the show from London, my hometown. I did not bring my trunk of blonde jokes with me. So here is one from the Jumble Justice Archives. Gloria the blonde once heard that milk baths would make you beautiful. She left a note for her milkman, Alan, to leave 15 gallons of milk. When Alan read the note, he felt there must be a mistake. He thought she probably meant 1.5 gallons, so he knocked on the door to clarify the order. Gloria came to the door, and Alan said, I found your note, to leave 15 gallons of milk. Did you mean 15 gallons or 1.5 gallons? Gloria said, I want 15 gallons. I'm going to fill my bathtub up with milk and take a milk bath. Alan asked, Oh, all right. Would you like it pasteurized? Gloria replied, No, just up to my waist.
Just up your waist. I think we had one about a milk bath before, but I'm not sure that was the joke, Audrey. And I hope you're enjoying your time at home. I wasn't going to tell folks that you're overseas at the moment, but thank you very much based on the time zone and the differences for joining us tonight on the show. We wish you the best of time and Happy New Year. And you'll be back next week for next week's show. Well, ladies and gentlemen, of course, we have a green tip for tonight. We wouldn't want to pass that up. And this one has to do with using wool. Have you ever heard about that? It's number 91 in Esma Floyd's 1001 Little Ways to Save the Planet. But when you're wearing wool, you're not only warmer, but you can turn the heat down using natural materials like wood and fabric in your home to keep it warm during winter. Hard man-made substances don't hold on to heat and therefore require more heating to maintain a warm temperature. Go natural whenever you can and warm up with wool. In other words, wear wool. I think sheep know that, right? They're out in the middle of, sheep know that they're out in the middle of the field and there's ice and rain and all sorts of things. But wool is a marvelous device. If you've ever done any outdoor running in cold weather, you'll know that wool really meets the bill in terms of what is needed. So thank you very much, Esma Floyd, for that that fine tip about preserving heat. You can turn your heat down, wear a wool sweater. I think they used to do that, right? I think they did. Well, let's take a look at some of the news stories tonight. Some of these, I'm going to try to contain myself in terms of going over some of the details and my commentary because they are a little bit odd. But let's start out with the normal one. Maybe before this one, we should appropriately play the Ohio Coalition's public service announcement against firearms.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition. And, of course, that message is directed to the criminals on the streets and in all the cities and counties in Ohio. And they're supposed to hear this and get out and turn in their guns. I'm not sure how successful this program has been over the years, but it couldn't be. It has to be the message to them, because that couldn't be law-abiding citizens. I don't think so. Okay, let's go ahead and take a look at this first news story tonight that relates to guns. This Wednesday, yesterday, the Ohio Supreme Court ruled on a case, and here's what they did. The Ohio Supreme Court has upheld a 2006 law that prohibits cities and other local governments from enforcing ordinances that are more restrictive than state gun laws. The city of Cleveland, of all places, had challenged the statute in order to continue enforcing ordinances that officials said were tailored to fight urban gun violence, including registration of handguns, restrictions on children's access to firearms, and prohibitions, on the possession or sale of assault weapons. Banning such ordinances would violate the state's home rule laws, the city argued. But in decision Wednesday, the court upheld the statute 5-2. And here's what they said. Law-abiding gun owners would face a confusing patchwork of licensing requirements, possession restrictions, and criminal penalties as they travel from one jurisdiction to another without a uniform statute, according to the ruling written by Justice Evelyn Lundberg Stratton. And that's correct. Just think of that. If you were a concealed license holder, law-abiding citizen, had to go through background check, training, all that business, and you're going from one community to the next, you get every time you cross the municipality line, the rules could change. So you could be a felon in one place and completely law-abiding in another one. So Mr. Pfeiffer, as he does, he dissented. He'd argued that the statute infringes upon municipalities' constitutional home rule rights by preventing them from tailoring ordinances concerning the regulation of guns to local conditions. The city's law director, of course, he's upset about that. He led the city's lawsuit. He said that the gun owners would now be able to walk through a public square with rifles, handguns, and assault weapons. That's probably going on right now. Don't you think in downtown Cleveland, right on the square? I'll bet there's all kinds of people, based on this decision, yesterday they're walking around with guns and rifles and assault weapons on the streets of Cleveland. He says Ohio banned some assault weapons, like sawed-off shotguns, but Cleveland banned a broader array of them. I imagine, you know, bean shooters are probably illegal in Cleveland. I'm sort of joking. But the inability to control guns in Cleveland, he says, where large numbers of people live, work and gather in close proximity to one another, limits proactive strategies for protecting our community and puts all of us at greater risk. Well, Mr. Marty Flask, might I say that you could, in fact, give gun criminals longer sentences. You could look harder for criminals who have guns and leave the law-abiding gun owners and carriers alone. That would be just a fine idea in my mind. Well, let's go to this next story. This is one that I just question what goes on in our school system. This is in Lee County, and this is in, where is this, Virginia? I'm sorry, I don't think it's Virginia. Don't quote me on that. Whoops, I can't see it. But anyway, this student in Lee County, she's an athletic and academic standout, said got involved in a lunchbox mix-up, and it's cut short her senior year. She's been expelled from school, and she's not allowed to return to college. She thinks it's going to hurt her college opportunities. But Ashley Smithwick of Sanford was suspended from Southern Lee High School in October after school personnel found a small paring knife in her lunchbox. Southwick said that personnel found the knife while searching the belongings of several students, possibly looking for drugs. The schools will occasionally, you know, stop what they're doing and go look at 25 lunchboxes or packs or whatever. So she got pulled into it. She doesn't have to be a bad person to be searched, Smithwick's father said, Joe Smithwick. The lunchbox really belonged, to Joe Smithwick, the father, who packs a paring knife to slice his apple that he takes to lunch with him every day. He and his daughter have matching lunchboxes. It's just an honest mistake. That was supposed to be my lunch because it had the whole apple. Ashley Smithwick said she had never gotten in trouble before and was surprised when the principal opened her lunchbox and found the knife. The teen was initially given a 10-day suspension. Now, might that be a little excessive? Well, stand by. She then received notice that she was suspended for the rest of the school year. That means through May or up to June. I don't understand why they would even begin to point the finger at me and use me as an example, she says. This month, Ashley Smithwick, a soccer player, takes college-level courses, which charged with misdemeanor possession of a weapon on school grounds. She's no longer allowed to set foot on the school's campus. They made it sound like it was a big old buck knife that you got out hunting with, she said. Darla Cole, the chief school resource officer in Lee County, told the news station there that she would not comment on the case. The school superintendent, he told the Sanford Herald that he can't discuss the specifics of the case, but school policy allows principals to consider the context of each case and determine discipline. He says students who accidentally carry a weapon reported to teachers will get a light punishment. If teachers find it themselves, then the discipline is harsher. Well, I guess if they get to your lunchbox before you do, that makes it a little unfair, doesn't it? But what kind of, may I use the term, bird brains are running these schools? And what type of police officer would allow them to proceed forward on something like that and charge this young woman? If these facts are accurate, I'm sure they are, why in the world would they run that girl's potential career in whatever she's going to enter by giving her a criminal record? Just absolutely odd, if you ask me. I don't understand. Okay. Did you see what happened? Mike's still laughing about this one. A bank robber in Sterling, Virginia, robbed a bank, and he wore a Hillary Clinton mask. That, I'm not kidding. I guess you can get a Hillary Clinton mask somewhere. I seldom search for one. But anyway, if you put on Hillary Clinton's mask, he did. He went in and robbed a bank, and the man left with an undisclosed amount of cash, and no injuries were reported. It was the second time in 2 months that this branch had been robbed. This is the highlight of the time for robberies. You know, December, November, December, always high months for robbery. Christmas time, a lot of people in the streets, a lot of purses to snatch, a lot of cash moving around. So the robbers know that, at least the ones that are smart enough know that. Robbery is not a genius crime, by the way. It has very low status in prison. Did you know that, a robber? They look at a robber like anybody can stick a gun on somebody's face. So they don't have very high status in the prison system. But anyway, isn't that odd? Everybody put in masks. Remember we had last week, the guy wore, it was the white gentleman that wore the black guy's mask. And I guess somebody that he ordered, remember his mask from like a stage store, supply store or something in California. And it actually moves with your face and all that business. I've never seen a mask like that, but apparently you can get things like that. You know, this, something has happened to this news article. It actually disappeared, and the print is so fine, and I've tried to increase the print size in my Evernote notes here, but it's gone. It's so fine I can't read it, but it's the Star Ledger. And it's talking about whether or not we should be using DUI checkpoints. Of course, you know, you probably realize, or maybe not know the exact dates, but from December 6th to January 2nd, local communities and states get money to run these DUI or for DUI enforcement, and they usually run these DUI checkpoints. That's where, you know, where five cops sit in lawn chairs and wait for you to pull up, and they delay traffic, and they always do them on major thoroughfares. Not out on the back roads. But anyway, they did a little study of the one here. One of these places, they used 300 police, what was it, departments got whatever. Anyway, in that all that time at the DUI checkpoint, they found, they ran it like 2 days, they found like three DUIs. But in another area that took the money and dispensed the people out and put the officers in patrol and had them go out and look for aberrant driving behavior, they found 215 DUIs, people arrested for DUI. And the major point of this is that the beverage companies think that this is unfair and it doesn't make good sense to run these DUI checkpoints because people usually know where they are. Some states advertise and tell you where they're going to be. And so you avoid them if you've been drinking a little bit. He says these social drinkers, people go out to dinner, have one glass of wine, and go home. They get stopped and have to go through a breathalyzer test when, in fact, they ought to be putting those cops in cars and letting them go out looking for dangerous driving behavior. I sort of agree with that. Let's just use common sense. I'm at one point, right, but I could be at 15 or 20 or 35 or 50 or 100 different points in my patrol car. End of story, I think. But anyway, kind of interesting that they would be looking at it that way. Let's look at that story up in Toledo. And here's a story of a mother, and she's visiting 16-year-old Eric, and she wished him a Merry Christmas. He's locked up in a juvenile detention facility. Then she scolded him for writing that he needed new pants with a 36-inch waist. And she tells him, she says, you ain't no 36. She says, stand up and look. But she's connected with him. She's a long way off. I forget how far away she lives, 150 miles away. So they've now connected them, the kid locked up in the juvenile detention center, and the mom by computer and webcams. And so now they can talk to each other that way. She has him stand up and says, you're no 34. Let me see. And what she's trying to do, she says she doesn't want him wearing any saggers. He wanted big pants, so I guess so they'd sag, and he'd be kind of in fashion. And she told him not to do this. But this is a little experiment. This allows youth to interact with their family, who may not have the resources to make in-person visits invaluable. So I don't know how far this will probably go. It's probably been done somewhere else. They're saying it hasn't. But kind of an interesting idea. Do we want to go to that much trouble to provide contact between parents, guardians, et cetera, with people locked up in prison? What's the next thing, prison? Of course, they don't need it. They've got cell phones that are probably doing Google Video on the cell phone or something like that. But kind of an interesting idea. They're trying it in the State Department houses juvenile offenders ages 10 to 21. Nearly 800 are in five facilities throughout the state. So they're going to experiment with us here in Ohio and see what kind of results. How would you evaluate that project if you were trying to decide whether it was worthwhile or not? Well, cost would be one factor, but convenience to the parents, et cetera, that, you know, who knows how they'll evaluate something like that. I see that the Indiana prison director got hired away to the state of Florida. The new elected governor of the state of Florida has decided he's going to do something with the prisons, and the recently elected governor of Florida has hired the Indiana Corrections Commissioner to run the Florida prison system. Rick Scott, who was elected Florida's governor in November, appointed Edwin Buss to the Florida post on Tuesday. He'll replace Walt McNeil. He says, "I'm grateful that Ed Buss is coming to Tallahassee to help me change the way the Department of Corrections does business here in Florida. I know he is ready to get to work to ensure our prisons operate most efficiently and cost-effectively." And guess what he's worried about? He's worried about prisons being filled. So they're talking about that they want to get into the business of letting the nonviolent criminals out of prison, or maybe not sending them there at all. Now, you know what a nonviolent criminal is, right? That's one that hasn't been caught inside your car or inside your house yet. That's one of those nonviolent criminals. But he says prisons should not be for nonviolent offenders. They can reduce the cost of maintaining. You could reduce the cost of maintaining prisons by not even having any, right? I suppose. One time in America we did that. Maybe we come back to corporal punishment. In Indiana, Buss was responsible for more than 7,500 employees and 26,000 inmates and 10,000 parolees. So now he's going to go to the state of Florida, and I suspect he'll have a greater challenge down there in that state. I've got another long story here for the news that I could talk about. It's about L.A.'s Def Shop. Emily, would you remind me of that next week, and we'll talk about that. It was kind of interesting. At the coroner's office running a little gift shop that started at one of the administrative secretary's desks years ago. It was supposed to make money. It's in the hole, and it's been in the hole for quite a while. But it's kind of interesting. They sell weird type of items. I'll talk about that next week. So let's go ahead and take a look or listen to this show called The Halls of Ivy. It's got pretty introductory music, and it's very well reacted. And I think you'll enjoy these. And this first one, I picked one that had to do with a crime, which in a way I could make it relevant to what we were doing. There's several in there about that, actually. But here we go with The Halls of Ivy. And this particular episode is about a book that is missing. The Stolen First Edition is the name of it. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Jaws of Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the largest selling beer in America. No wonder it's the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
If you like good beer, you'll find it pays to be curious and learn about Schlitz for yourself. And now, The Halls of Ivy. Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. It's a quiet day, a day of contentment, if not fulfillment. Even the flies muffle their buzz in respect to the general repose. But judge not according to the appearance. In a dormitory, two students cramming for a final examination in calculus are engaged in a hot contest of canasta. A professor of philosophy has just scalded his throat with a boiling cup of tea. And in the tranquil home of Ivy's president, Dr. William Todhunter Hall, His wife, Victoria, erstwhile leading actress of the London stage, is pacing the floor as though waiting for a first night curtain.
Howdy! Is that you?
Hello, darling. Am I late?
No, but I just couldn't wait for you to get back today.
Why today more than any other day?
Because I have something for you that I think you've wanted for a long time.
Has there ever been a moment that you haven't had everything I've wanted for a long time?
Yeah, there you are. For Dr. Hall, with the compliments of Mrs. Hall.
Oh?
Well, go on. Unwrap it.
First, I'd like to make a little speech about how my gratitude runneth over.
You open it, open it. Do open it.
Yes. Yeah, it looks like it's... and it is a book. It's... Vicky.
You're welcome, Todd.
But Vicky, how in the world... John Donne.
Is it really the first edition? I wasn't too sure.
Yes, it's the quarto. Look. Here we are. Look. The poems by J.D. with elegies on the author's death. London. Printed by M.F. for John Marriott. And are to be sold at his shop in St. Dunstan's Churchyard in Fleet Street, 1633.
What you wanted?
Oh, Vicky, my angel. I've been searching for this slim little treasure for some 15 years. I've accumulated enough dust from bookshelves both sides of the Atlantic to fill up the Pacific. I've ransacked every seductive cellar and attic, from the Hebrides to Halifax, and you... Where in the world did you find it?
I don't think that's a fair question.
Why not?
Don't you know, darling, that every woman must have at least one secret to be a woman?
It's a hangover. I see. So it's none of my business. All right. Wheresoever, howsoever, and howsoever much, I will thankfully receive. Forgive me, my darling. I haven't even kissed you for it. I am entirely and everlastingly indebted. Again. And again. And again.
Ooh, Toddy. All that for just one little book. For Christmas, I'll give you Dr. Elliot's 5-foot shelf.
Well, there's more where that came from, but... Vicky, wait. Where's the poem I want? It's somewhere near the... here it is. Yeah, do you remember? The Good Morrow. I wonder, by my troth, what thou and I did till we loved. Were we not weaned to... Unquestionably someone who hates love and poetry. Well, we did dispose of him in short order. Excuse me, darling. Hello, Dr. Hall speaking.
Hello, Doctor. This is Merriweather.
Nice to hear from you, Mr. Merriweather.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to bother you, but I thought you should know that Clarence Wellman's in a tizzy again.
Again? Well, that's a chronic condition, isn't it?
Nothing that concerns you, Doctor, but whenever there's trouble, leave it to Clarence to tie it on your front steps. His bomb sight is permanently focused on your door now.
What now?
His cousin, George Maple.
You and the rest of the board appointed him college librarian. I wash my hands of it with a good, strong soap.
Yeah, well, it really isn't Maple.
Well, then who is it and what is it?
Wellman says that there's a criminal rampant on the campus.
Well, in the first place, Mr. Wellman doesn't know the word rampant. And if he does, I'm sure he thinks they're trousers for lamb chops. Secondly, what has that got to do with Maypole? Or do you mean that Maypole is running rampant?
Well, it could be, Doctor. It could be. Well, it seems a brand new old book is missing from the library.
Oh.
According to Maypole, as reported by Wellman, this book is worth a lot of money. College library got it with a new Breckenridge donation. Hasn't even been cataloged yet. Wellman's threatening to send for J. Edgar Hoover.
Mr. Merriweather, do you know the title?
Well, it hasn't got any. Just an old book of poems.
Well, the name of the author?
He couldn't have thought much of his stuff. He just signed his initials, J.D. Did Rockefeller ever write any poetry? Are you still there, Doctor?
Yes. I'm here. And then again, I'm not quite sure.
Well, I don't see how Wellman can possibly pin this on you, but I just wanted to let you know. Don't let him worry you, Doctor.
Oh, I'm not worrying about Wellman.
Good.
Oh, thanks. Thanks very much, Mr. Merriweather. Goodbye. Victoria, in the first surge of excitement, I may have misunderstood you. You just brought me this book to look over. Was that it?
No, no, Mr. Darling, it's yours. I bought it just for you.
Yes, I understand. That is, I didn't misunderstand. You did buy this book?
Well, of course I bought it. I told you that. Well, are you bothered because I didn't tell you what I paid for it?
Well, it would help to know.
Well, then, I paid exactly 50 cents for it.
Ouch.
Well, what's the matter with that? Isn't it good?
Good. My dear Mrs. Hall, the last list price on this rare and precious volume was $1,450. Why, Vicky, that's the first time I ever heard you whistle.
For $1,450, I just learned how.
Where did you get this remarkable bargain?
At the campus bookshop on the remainder table.
Mm. Do you mind if I called them?
Not at all. Why should I?
Campus bookshop. Epsom speaking.
This is Dr. Hall.
Oh, good afternoon, Dr. Hall. May I help you?
I hope so. I'm calling in reference to a first edition of poem by John Donne.
Oh, my gosh. Pardon me, Dr. Hall, but that's all I've been hearing all day. Between Mr. Wellman and the Maypole, you think I stole that book. They've been on the phone every 5 minutes since noon. Now they're even threatening to search my shop.
I see. Then you've never had it in your store?
Oh, heavens, no. Not that I wouldn't have loved it for myself. And I know how much you've always wanted, Dr. Hall.
Yes, yes, I have.
Oh, you must feel very badly about all this.
Yes, yes, I do.
Well, for your sake, I hope they find the book.
For my sake? Oh, yes. Well, thank you very much, Miss Remsen. Goodbye.
I did buy it there, Toddy, no matter what he said. I bought it there this morning.
Yes, of course you did, my dear.
Now, look, darling, I'm not a child, so you might just as well tell me what's going on. It all started with that telephone call from Mr. Merriweather, didn't it? Well, come on, Toddy, come on, I can take it.
By a remarkable coincidence, a rare book has disappeared from the Ivy Library.
Oh, a first edition of poems by John Donne, which I bought at the campus bookshop today, only they never had it?
That is approximately the situation. You must face the truth, Vicky. This is a hot book.
Well, does that make me an accessory after the fact or something?
If you are an accessory, my dear, you're the most indispensable one since the self-starter.
You would defend me, I know.
But you remember who sold you the book?
I don't know his name. It was a young boy. He must be new at the bookstore. I don't think I've ever seen him there before.
Well, by some agency, whether natural or supernatural, this book was transported from the library to the bookshop where you found it. And we'll have to return it at once. At once. And with an apologetic footnote to the good Dr. Dunn. Seek not to learn for whom the cash register tolls, Doctor. It tolls for thee. I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the largest selling beer in America. No wonder it's the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
We'll return to the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman in just a moment. But first, let's hear how one man turned an idle moment into an ideal experience.
Well, I'm a member of that large fraternity, the Tired Businessmen of America. See, it's not a club anybody can get in it, although there are certain qualifications. Take mine. I've worked hard all my life, haven't had a vacation in 5 years. And my wife keeps telling me I don't know how to take it easy. And she's right, of course. Or at least she was. Things have been different the last few weeks. Lately, when I get home from the shop, I've been finding a bottle of Schlitz beer next to my favorite chair. That's the little woman's subtle way of getting me to slow down. And by George, it works, too. I remember the first night she put out the Schlitz beer for me. I came home after a pretty rugged day with everybody wanting their orders at once and four of my men home ill. I was dead tired and You don't know how good that bottle of Slitz looked to me right then. I sat down in the chair, kicked off my shoes and put on my slippers, and then poured myself a tall glass with a good collar on it. I took a man-sized swallow and then leaned back and let that fine Slitz flavor roll around in my tongue. Well, if I had known that Slitz was the largest selling beer in America, I'd have known that it deserved to be. And by the way, if you want to see a picture of a man who knows how to ease up and enjoy himself, drop around my place before dinner some evening. I'll be sitting there with my bottle of Slitz. There'll be one for you. And you can join me in saying, no wonder they call Slitz the beer that made Milwaukee famous. Return to the halls of Ivy, we find them preparing regretfully to return their precious first edition to its rightful owner, the Ivy College Library.
Toddy, the binding's falling apart. We could take it back page by page.
No, darling. All or nothing. Just blindfold me, tie my hands and arms, tack John down under my elbow, and we'll be on our way.
Shall I untie you so you can answer the door, dear?
Oh, no, you remain seated, Mrs. Hall, just in case it's Wellman.
I could swallow the evidence leaf by leaf.
$1,450 worth, A rich dish. Come in.
Good afternoon, Dr. Hall. I'd like to talk to Mrs. Hall for just a minute. It's terribly important.
Oh, you sound important, Mrs.
I'm Tucker Mill, sir. I'm a freshman.
Oh, I'd never have guessed it. Come in, Tucker. Vicky, Mr. Tucker Mills to see you.
Oh, why, William, this is the boy in the bookshop.
Please, Mrs. Hall, could I speak to you privately? I mean, personally, on business?
Well, I would have to be obtuser than I am not to perceive and act upon a hint as broad as that.
Please excuse us, William.
Yeah, I'll take a long stroll into my study. I want to look up a word, obtuser, as a comparative adjective.
Mrs. Hall, do you remember you bought a book from me this morning?
Indeed, I do.
I'll give you a dollar for it.
Tucker, I only paid 50 cents. I wouldn't want to make a profit. It was a purchase, not an investment.
Will you take 50 cents, then?
It isn't mine to sell. I gave it to someone else.
Oh. Well, do you think you could get it back?
I doubt it.
Would you tell me who it is? Maybe I can make a deal for a dollar and a half.
Well, why are you so anxious to buy this book back, Tucker?
Oh, a friend of mine wants it.
Well, a friend of mine, has it? Very dear friend.
Oh, there's got to be a way. There's just got to.
It means so much to you. Perhaps if you explain to Dr. Hall.
Oh, that's all I need, the present.
Dr. Hall may have his forbidding aspect, but he's really a rather wise and compassionate man. And besides, he's the one that has the book now.
Oh, I'm cooked. Gee, I didn't want to tell you, Mrs. Hall, but you're in awful trouble.
I am?
And I got you into it. Do you know what that book was that you bought from me?
Yes. A first edition of poems by John Donne.
Well, why didn't you tell me? If you knew what it was, why did you let me sell it to you for only 50 cents? Gee, it's worth an awful lot more than you paid for it.
I know. I'm told it's worth almost $1,500.
What? Oh, brother. Who told you that?
Dr. Hall.
I'm dead.
Oh, Tommy, will you come in here, please?
Yes, darling.
A young man just died.
So I see. He's quivering with rigor mortis. To coin a medical novelty.
Dr. Hall, I didn't do a thing, but now I've got you all into a mess, and I wish I'd never taken that darn job.
Now, sit down. Vicky, would you scare up a snack for Tucker?
Sure, he looks a little weak. Vitamin's coming right up.
Now, go ahead, Tucker. What were you saying?
Well, I work for the campus bookshop. This morning they sent me to the library to pick up some duplicate books. You know, whenever the library gets a new shipment, they weed out the shelves and sell all the extras to the store, and we put them on the bargain table. Well, there was a whole pile of them in the library office today, so I just took them. Nobody can blame me for that, can they?
Oh, it's always possible to blame anybody for anything. That's why the index finger is slightly curved. It points around corners. When did you find out that you'd taken the John Donne along with the others?
Oh, when Mrs. Hall picked it out. Oh. It was such a beat-up book, it didn't look worth 50 cents. And that's why I noticed it. Then when Mr. Empton started yelling about a valuable old book by John Donne missing from the library, I just ran here as fast as I could. I didn't want to make any trouble for Mrs. Hall.
Well, thank you. I can still make my entrances on cue. Here you are, boys. No tipping, please.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am. Vicky, Tucker here has just vividly described the peregrination of a particular book, which has put us all in a kind of a pickle.
Well, you can read it with relish, Doctor.
Well, it's all very simple, Tucker. Mr. Maypole will understand when we explain what happened.
For Maypole? He'll never understand. He hates me.
Oh, then it isn't so simple. Why does he hate you?
Well, I used to work for him at the library. One day I found a book he'd misplaced, and he never forgave me. Then when Professor Cameron asked him for a book, Maypole said it wasn't in the library, only I found it in the stack. I got fired for that. I thought I was doing him a favor.
Well, when you help somebody like Maypole, you often expose him. Well, don't worry, Tucker. I'll return the book to the library myself. Maypole need never know you had anything to do with the matter.
Gee, you can't do that, Dr. Hall. I got you into this, and besides, the book's really yours now.
I think we should have that door removed in a 10-cent turnstile installed. I'll get it.
Tucker, I told you Dr. Hall would understand.
He's a great man, Mrs. Hall.
Oh, Mr. Wellman. Mr. Wellman!
Uh-oh.
You don't have to shout, Dr. Hall. May I come in?
Yes, of course, Mr. Wellman. Come in. Come in, Mr. Wellman!
Quick, Tucker, let's find a foxhole in the kitchen.
Mr. Wellman, I'm honored.
This is not a social call, Dr. Hall. I thought you'd be relieved to know that the thief has been found.
Oh, what did he steal?
Didn't Merriweather call you, or is it so unimportant that it has already slipped your mind, Dr. Hall? A rare volume was stolen from the library.
Oh, yes, the John Donne.
The thief is one of the students, Tucker Mills.
Well, what makes you...
He has a bad record. My cousin had to fire him from the library. He's been working recently at the campus bookshop and was seen in Maypole's office this morning when the book disappeared. The police will soon pick him up.
Then I assume it's out of my hands. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wellman, for taking the trouble to relieve my mind.
Your mind? Oh, yes. Goodbye, Dr. Hall.
Well, come out, wherever you are.
That Cossack gone, Doddy. Come on, Tucker, the coast's clear.
Weather still cloudy, small storm ahead, I'm afraid.
Gee, Dr. Hall, I'm terribly sorry. I better give myself up and just tell the truth.
Oh, I believe in the truth too, Tucker, but if Wellman and Maypole have their way, and they must have it to clear up Maypole's blunder, you'd have your day in court, and I've no doubt the justice would eventually prevail. But in the meantime, what about your term papers? Your final examinations? You'll miss all of that. Who's going to make up for it? For all of truth, you'll still pay a penalty, and that would be very unfair.
Gee, Doctor, and besides that, I'm causing you an awful lot of trouble.
Oh, you weren't the cause, Tucker, but you could be the innocent victim. And you will be unless we find a way to silence Wellman and Maypole. For instance, if the missing book were to be found in the presence of witnesses, right on Maypole's desk where it was all along, or should have been, well, then I think they'd be glad to let the matter drop.
Who's going to put it there?
I'll toss you for it.
Oh, you've got a two-headed nickel. You always win. I'll keep looking for another one, and someday I'll find it. Maybe at an old rummage sale or the cut-rate drugstore somewhere.
You know, Vicky, so often the end of a search is the beginning of disillusions. But I remember one occasion when it was the beginning of everything.
When was that?
Oh, not too many years ago in London. I, usually so full of words, in an excess of adoration, caught another voice. I rushed you to the British Museum Library, found the volume I wanted, so that another might speak my heart for me. You remember the quiet of that library as I read to you from John Donne? I wonder by my troth what thou and I did till we loved.
William, you always part your hair on the right side.
Yes. Shall I start over?
And does the iris in your eyes always flash little sparks?
No. I don't think so.
I'm sorry, darling. Go on.
I wonder by my troth what thou and I did till we loved. Were we not weaned till then? But sucked on country pleasures childishly? Or snorted we in the seven sleepers' den? 'Twas so. But this all pleasures, fancies be. If ever any beauty I did see, which I desired and got, 'twas but a dream of thee. And now, good morrow to our waking souls, which watch not one another out of fear, for love, all love of other sights controls, and makes one little room and everywhere.
Excuse
me, sir. If you two are going to make a commotion, you'll have to leave this library.
Oh, my good man, are you calling love a commotion?
Who is speaking of love, sir?
What else is there to speak of, sir? And if you insist on making a commotion about love...
Toddy, I'd love to make that kind of a commotion. If you could drag yourself back from wherever you are, and wherever it is, I'd like to be there, too.
You always are, my dear.
Dr. Hall...
Mr. Maple.
Oh, I'm sorry I wasn't here in my office to greet you. I left for a moment to check with the police department.
Oh, are you on probation for something, Mr. Maple?
Of course not. You know what has happened.
Well, I've heard disturbing rumors that you lost a very valuable book from the Breckinridge collection.
Lost? Lost, indeed. Dr. Hall, it was stolen.
Of what was stolen, Mr. Maple?
A first edition of John Donne. I thought you knew.
John Donne? Oh, I saw it here a minute ago. Where was it? Here we are. You mean this?
What? Dr. Hall, where did you get this book?
Why, I just picked it up from your desk here.
It wasn't there. It couldn't have been. I tore this place apart. I know it wasn't there. In fact, I know who took it.
Couldn't you have made a mistake, Mr. Maple?
I never make a mistake. I know who had this book.
Oh. Then you knew I had it.
You?
I bought it.
You?
I bought it for Dr. Hall. For 50 cents.
50 cents? You couldn't have.
But I did. I bought it at the campus bookshop.
How did it get to the campus bookshop?
Perhaps the answer is that you left a very valuable piece of merchandise lying on top of a pile of discards.
The boy stole it.
Now, why should a boy steal something worth almost $1,500 and sell it for 50 cents? Particularly when he didn't make a cent for himself.
I'll talk to dear Mr. Wellman about this.
Do by all means. I hardly think that your cousin, who is at least a good businessman, would approve of such ineptitude.
This is a trick, Dr. Hall.
No, Mr. Maple, just a full, if somewhat eccentric, circle. We should be grateful the circle is now completed. But I don't think the Board of Governors would find it very funny if they knew that the custodian of such valuable treasures as this didn't know a first edition from a duplicate.
Dr. Hall, in all my years, I've never been accused.
In all your years and in all the years to come, Mr. Maple, you should be everlastingly indebted to one person, my wife. If she hadn't bought this book, somebody else might have come along and bought it. And then where would you have been? Good afternoon, Mr. Maple.
Toddy, you are magnificent. But can you switch our plans around a little? Why, you told Maple the real story. He didn't deserve to know the truth.
I couldn't help myself, darling. I'm a lazy man, and I've always found the truth so much less effort than evasion. You know, sometimes I... Vicky.
What is it?
Something awful has happened. We've got to go back to the library.
But, Toddy, are you all right? What is it?
George Maple owes you 50 cents.
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the largest selling beer in America. No wonder it's the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
And here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Be sure to see Ronald Coleman's latest picture, Champagne for Caesar. We'll be seeing you next week at this time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. Friends, Look Magazine, now on the newsstands, carries a wonderful story about Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman and the Halls of Ivy. It's called Ronald Coleman Becomes a College President. When you read it and see the interesting pictures, you'll know why the Colemans fit so convincingly the roles of Dr. Hall and the charming Vicky. That's Look Magazine, on the stands now. Other players in our cast tonight were Willard Waterman, Herbert Butterfield, Rolf Sedan, Sidney Miller, and William Tracy. Tonight's script was written by Barbara and Milton Merlin and Don Quinn. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Matt Wolf, and presented by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ken Carpenter speaking.
It's the Great Gildersleeve on NBC.
Well, that's the end of that show. I've listened to about five of these out of the 111. This was an interesting show and funny, of course, but some of the others are more funny, and I'm looking forward to listening to more of them in the future. I think you'll really enjoy them. And several of them have to do with crimes on campus and that type of thing, but most of it has to do with the president and their task of working with, the oddball professors and all the board members and the things that they run into on campus. It's almost like a little clinic with humor as the background on how to work on a college campus. I hope you enjoyed it. Well, we're going to have Vera Lynn sign us off tonight, and we'll meet again. And I think the time we meet again will be 2011. Is that right, Mike? It is. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.